we go. Oh, baby, welcome to Duck It Motherfucking Dialogue.
Oh, man, that was pretty good.
Going hard here.
All righty, baby, here with a special guest today. Super excited. Haven't talked to him since, I think, maybe after deployment, 2010 or so. Adam Ramsey, everybody. He was in the 132 infantryman. He was deployed with me in Afghanistan. Glad to have you, dude.
Hey, Doc, it's good to be here, man. It's awesome to link back up, you know, kind of odd coincidence, but I definitely think it has been since we were both out. I don't think we've talked at all.
Yeah, really, man. It's hard too, because I always have a lot of you guys on my mind, and I think about a lot of you, you know, a lot. But I just, it's funny how you're with these people for so long in this tiny space, you know, you're living in these tiny quarters together 24/7, you know, with each other's lives, you know, you trust each other with each other's lives, and all of a sudden you get out and it's just boom, gone, you know, the whole lot of them. So it's just a weird, the military is weird like that, you know?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you know, kind of like you talked about, and we had such a brotherly connection with everyone, you know, just so natural and everything. And then, like you said, we kind of just dissipated, and those of us who weren't in anymore kind of just lost contact with, you know, and maybe every now and then you have that friend you talk to or whatever, but it's not like when you were in, and it's kind of a, that's kind of a shocker, you know, that's like a relationship that you kind of feed on. Yeah. And that's kind of ripped from you.
Yeah. And you know, and you have that support, you have like, everyone's has a common goal. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're thrust into the civilian world again, and you don't have those connections with people like you had, you know, people don't really understand the bond that's created when you're, you know, in a situation like that, especially, you know, deployed in Afghanistan and, you know, in a war zone. So,
right. Yeah. Man. No, and, you know, with that being said, I mean, just, you know, just the fact that, you know, you had that at least I did. When I got out, I had like 30 days of little reintegration meetings here and there. And, you know, you can go to college, you can do this. And, but really nothing about how to deal with the shit we saw. Unless maybe you were seeking some therapy and you were getting some kind of benefit from that if you were able to. But yeah, I mean, just to roll out and like, I don't know when you got out. I got out like right after 2009 deployment. So it was like the end of 2010. And, you know, with less than a year back home, also in garrison setting, you still don't have any kind of, you know, functionality in real society.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough because, you know, you're programmed the whole time to do certain things, and then and everything's kind of presented to you, everything's so scheduled, and then you gotta, you're like, oh, okay, wait, where's the person telling me what to do?
So. Definitely that was kind of nice, you know, for some of us, you know, it might have been a pain in the ass to go to formation and do all the shit, but you knew that was every day, right? We did the morning thing, we did that, you know, whatever you did, you know, your check-in before you got, you know, it was just kind of the things you did. And that's where you got to hang out with your support too, you know. But yeah, definitely. And then you have all this time, right? You don't know how, at least I didn't. I didn't know how to manage any of my time. When I got out, I moved to North Carolina. I went to school, and, you know, that was just a shit show because, like you said, you know, I didn't have anyone telling me what to do. It was kind of on my own time and could do whatever I wanted. And, you know, I had no, drive yet at that point still, you know, I thought school would kind of, help me out to kind of reintegrate, but, I don't know. I was going to school with 20-year-old guys.
Yeah.
Who just, you know, a party or whatever, but.
Yep. And it's hard to, you know, especially when I went to school, you know, I had such more of an appreciation for it. You know what I mean? Because before even the Army, I didn't even care. I didn't want to go to school. And then after, I was like, you know what? You know, I went through all this shit. Let me fucking really, you know, try at this. And you know, I did really well. and it was definitely weird. I felt like that Billy Madison that in kindergarten where he's just this old dude sitting there with a bunch of little kids. But dude, I want to talk about, I guess, did you have any family in the military prior? What made you join the military, and what kind of gave you that idea?
Yeah, I mean, I my grandpa was in the Navy. That really had no effect on why I joined. Really, I was in high school. I did good in high school. I had great grades. Graduated with honors. I thought I was gonna go off to college, and then I started fucking around and doing the wrong thing, and just kind of got caught up with the wrong crowd and doing drugs and shit, really. Mm. And that's kind of what drove me. My parents were like, what the fuck, you went from doing fine, having a job, having your own car payment, doing all this stuff. And now, the first year out of high school, you just dropped the ball on everything. What the fuck's going on? Mm. And, so that was the main things. My parents were like, hey, we're not going to support you anymore if you don't get your shit together or join the military. It's kind of like court, parent court.
Okay.
I respect my family, regardless of some of the shit we've gone through, some of the troubles we've had and stuff. And, I was like, well, I guess this is it. And, that's really was the main driver there. And then, pretty much it was like a smooth process. I mean, I went down and talked to the recruiter. And
how old were you?
So I was 20.
Okay.
I joined. Yeah. And, so I went and talked to the recruiter, and, of course, I already had in my mind that, I was going to be, in combat. I wanted to see stuff. I wanted to shoot big guns and all that kind of army stuff. Right. And, so he gladly, was able to fill a 11 Bravo position.
Oh, you want to be a grunt? Okay.
Great. So I mean, and like I said, I went and talked to him. It was pretty smooth from there. I was promised, the whole world, the bonus and all that kind of stuff, which I did get. Don't get me wrong, I got a bonus, and I got college paid for, and that's all stuff that are benefits, right? And but regardless, you're kind of promised some things that don't happen, and where you're going to be stationed and that kind of thing. But
you didn't want to get stationed at Fort Drum?
This is my first pick, man. third pick. No, I was really hoping to be stationed out in California, be closer to home. But I think, there's just a small infantry unit in California. It's, pretty hard to get into. And it's not an infantry, battalion or anything. But I wanted to be closer to home, and it didn't happen. But oh, well, I mean, that was, the least of my worries, or whatever. But so I went to basic like everyone else. I went to Fort Benning in Georgia in the middle of the summer, and it was horrible. And for what it is now, I look back and just some of the basic disciplines that kind of stick with you, and some of the memories and stuff, right? And of course, there's good times during that shitty situation or whatever, but you kind of put yourself there. And I was glad to be there. I was glad to be out of trouble, and I was kind of glad to have my parents' support back. And I didn't mind doing that gig. And so infantry is what is it called? Single station unit training, I believe, whatever. One
okay,
unit,
because you do your basic AIT all in one go.
Stay there. You don't
turn this AC on real quick, bro. I'm fucking dying up here.
I think it's one station unit training.
Thermostat. I love having Amazon. Sorry to interrupt here, guys. I'm in the attic and it's hotter than balls. It's hotter than Fort Benning, Georgia in the summertime.
Huh? You just click a fan on though, huh? And comfort comes your way.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that great? We didn't have that when we were deployed. So you did basic training. And because you joined us when we were deployed for about like a month or so. So how long from when you graduated basic training was it that you were in Afghanistan? Because I feel like you were one of the guys that were like, hey, congratulations on your graduation. You're going to Afghanistan tomorrow.
Yeah. It was actually, they told me 25 days right when I got to the unit. So I showed up at Fort Drum, checked in, you know, blah, blah, blah. And me and another guy were supposed to come to you. It was actually a guy that you guys didn't meet or anything. He bailed at Drum.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But yeah, so I got there. They said like 25 days. I think it ended up being 29. Got to do all of the little training shit and do the rollover Humvee course and stuff. I think it was stuff you guys did before you guys left.
Mm-hmm.
It was on the far side of Drum, I think out near like the airstrips and stuff. And go to rollover training, go to like IED identification, did some language classes. But yeah, I mean, basically, so it was within a month. It was 29 days from the day I checked in at Fort Drum till the day I left to fly to Afghanistan.
So when you got there, and you got there about a month late, so we had just left then.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
I think basically because you know, when you guys, I don't know if you guys had to do any training at what's the big base? I'm drawing a blank.
For the Louisiana one?
Giant air base in Afghanistan.
Oh, Bagram.
Yeah. But I don't know, you know, you guys were in Altamir when I got there.
Well, so we got there, you fly into Kuwait first and then Manus, or was it Manus then Kuwait? I can't remember.
I think Kuwait, then Manus.
Okay, so we went into Kuwait, and then we flew into Manus, you know, and we were there for, like, you know, maybe Kuwait a week or so, a couple days, and then Manus, same thing. And then we flew into Bagram, and then we did some training there. So at the big base, Bagram, Afghanistan, is a really protected base. You know, it's huge. For people that don't know, it was the, second biggest base, or one of the two biggest bases there. And had everything, you know, had like coffee places and shit like that. So it was pretty secure. You know, they got attacked every now and again, but they were pretty secure. So we did some training there, and then that's when we shipped off to Altamir. And then we were in Altamir, which was another base. It was a COP that was just, I guess they had just built it recently, but it wasn't really getting attacked much. There wasn't much going on there. I think we had a couple times where we got attacked, but you know, mortared and stuff like that. But overall, it wasn't like what we were about to get into. So,
yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I remember when we got there and we were doing just walkout missions, you know, from there. And I think it was like this, it was the second day I was there. We went out on a mission. And of course, like, you know, like you said, so Bagram, really big air base. Not worried about much, you know, and then to go to Altamir and you're kind of just out in the elements. And at least for me, you know, and I'm sure you guys were, you know, like you said, you guys were there maybe a month or whatever, but did, you know, you're out in the middle of nowhere, right? I don't know this country. And, it was crazy cause, and Chris will agree, but Afghanistan looks a lot like, Northern Nevada, just kind of spotty sagebrush desert, like rock cliffs and like, you know, sporadic, just the sparse tree that, you know, every now and then we found. But yeah, that was definitely, so, you know, for me, from basic training to out in the middle of nowhere, Afghanistan in like 45 days. Of course, you know, Stovall was my squad leader. And of course gave me fucking a million rounds of 240 and a tripod and all this stuff, right? Trying to get me down, you know, or what, they're just breaking me in, you know. But that was interesting, you know, going from you know, and we didn't have it's the one thing, you know, so you can shoot guns, you can do all this training, you can ruck march, and you know, but kind of the unknown, right, is what you're just, you know, it's out there. And I agree, though. I mean, Altamer, pretty easy, right? I mean, I think we maybe got into a few little squabbles on some foot patrols and maybe a couple little things at the base. But yeah. That was really it. I mean, we were still kind of just hanging out, you know. And I think it was good. A lot of us still were, you know, still fresh and weren't complacent.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
That kept us sturdy, I think.
And that's tough for you because you came into a situation where you had never met your platoon. You never met a single person in your platoon that you're going to. You know, you got to a unit and, you know, within the people that were there obviously weren't in Afghanistan. So you came to this where you had to, you know, find your place and try to get into that group while you're in a war zone. And you just, you know, you were in basic training a month prior and you were a civilian a month and a half before that. So it's very interesting to hear your perspective on it, especially, you know, I know it was very tough when you first got there because it, you know, these guys had been training together for so long and a lot of, you know, they were really, really tough on their training because a lot of the higher ups, like, you know, had been on, you know, multiple deployments before that. And on very, very, very tough deployments, like, you know, the Korangal and stuff like that. So they knew what was coming down the pipe and they wanted to make sure that, you know, I feel like a lot of the, not even hazing. I mean, yeah, hazing in a sense, but not in a place of like, I hate you. It's more of like, I need to do this because I want you to fucking survive, you know, and if I treat you and baby you, the enemy's not going to do that. Someone shooting at you is not going to do that, you know? So you have to, you know, really hammer it in that this is a, you know, you have to listen. You have to, you know, follow orders. You can't question things. Like when somebody says do this, you just go fucking do it because that leadership had so much knowledge and so much experience that, you know, you just can't train that. You can't teach that. So,
right. Definitely. I mean, you touched on it right there. Everyone had seen each other's performance. Everyone knew each other's niche. They knew who they could depend on to run fast. They knew who they could depend on to ruck weight. And then here's me. I show up fresh. No one knows me. No one's trained a minute with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I show up and I say, hey, guys, I want to be in the crew.
Yep.
And yes, absolutely. And I'll tell you, you know, there was definitely some times where I, you know, felt like it was hazing per se, right? But absolutely, no. It, you know, like you nailed it. I think, you know, Sergeant Camacho had my ass
yeah.
a long time.
But he had everybody's ass that to the equivalent of he had having yours.
My gosh. And what
in garrison, man, like watching them train and like I didn't, you know, at first because I was a fresh medic. I got, you know, I joined at 19. So I was just a little, you know, chipper fucking yay. Like, you know, and I got to your guys' platoon and I'm like, holy shit. Like, you know, and I was like, man, how like they're treating them like shit. And then in retrospect, I look back on it after everything that we went through. I'm like, I'm fucking so glad that they trained the way they did. And they, you know, at the time it seemed like unjust or unfair or like, you know, terrible. Fucking like, man, this is some humanitarian, like this is some we're breaking some laws or something. But, you know, going through the deployment and knowing how trained everybody was and how everybody knew exactly what they needed to do because he's ingrained it in their fucking skull so deep that it was just like, you know, flipping a light switch. You know, it was easy. Yeah. Not easy, but it just, everything came so naturally. You didn't have to think, you know, because when you have to think about what you're doing, that's when you get fucking killed. So,
yeah. I think what it was, they had to catch me up.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they do, you know. They wanted to know that I was on level with everyone else, and yeah, absolutely nothing but respect for everyone who smoked the shit out of me, right? You know, because yes, it was absolutely that. And then in turn, I think that some of the, you know, uppers saw that I didn't fucking give up, that I didn't fucking cave, and ended up, you know, putting me in the position, you know, down the road. It was, you know, a couple months down the road, but ended up putting me on the gun.
Yep.
Machine gun. And, you know, I mean, what an honor. I mean, people don't, you know, people say, oh, you just rucked around a, you know, big old gun, you know, kind of thing. But it's like, you know, yeah, I it's funny. You say, oh, I showed up and I was all happy and cheery and shit. And I still remember, you know, you kind of were. And then it's funny because I remember one time, I think we were exercising, me, you and Johnson, maybe, or me, you, Johnson and Van. But you just like turned, you were just like, what the fuck, guys? I don't remember what it was, you know, but I just was like, oh, he's got it too. Yep. He can be fucking giggly and shit, but when it comes to it, you know, not that I didn't doubt like medical skills or whatever, you know, but I kind of felt like you were, you know, you were kind of attached, but kind of the same thing as me, right? You're kind of trying to show them that you can fucking, you know, you can ruck and walk, you can fucking be aware of shit, you know, as well as do your job, you yeah. know? Yeah, I mean, no, definitely. It was lots of exercising in the beginning made for a limit later.
I don't remember that. What, tell me the, when we were getting smoked and I got pissed or something.
I think it was at Bogus, honestly. Okay. But yeah, it was, I think it was me, you, Van, and Johnson, and something, you know, was going on. Chappelle and Camacho were out there. And then I think they were just continuing because Van and Johnson were fucking off or couldn't do it or whatever. But I don't remember exactly. I think we were just getting smoked in general, you know, like around or whatever. And you were just like, fuck you guys, what the fuck or something. And you know, I could just see you were just like sick of the bullshit, and you had that light switch you could turn on and off.
Yeah.
And you know, a couple of times too when we were out and stuff, just you know, you just start to, man, it's just like you said, like we talked about in the beginning, it's just so much different when you deploy, you serve next to someone in that kind of situation. Brotherly feeling is not really the thing of, you know, that expresses it, in my opinion. But like you said, I mean, we just had to catch up, at least I did, and they caught me up, you know. It took a little bit, but I think by the time we got to Bogus, which, you know, I think everyone was kind of on their game.
Mm-hmm.
And we were flowing pretty good, at least. But yeah, it was just doing the missions and stuff in general was some crazy shit. Some of the stuff that, you know, I know people talk about like war action and stuff, but some of the stuff right away was just the culture shock. Mm-hmm. And seeing those little kids pen mister.
Yeah. That's, you know, speaking on that, it's like, you know, you have kids here that want Xboxes, PlayStations, all this stuff. And you know, these kids want a fucking pen so they can be able to write. You know, like they, right. You give them a pen and it's like you gave them $1 million. And, you know, and that's stuff that sticks with me. And like just how little they had, but seeing still people being happy with the situation that they're in. And like a little light switch kind of, or, you know, a little like epiphany hit me like, oh, wow. Happiness isn't something that you go to attain. It's something that is you just accept. You know what I mean? Your happiness is just your mindset, you know, how you view the situation you're in. It's all choice, you know? And I'm like, so I wouldn't change any of that, you know, going forward or, you know, going back. If I could go back in time, there's so much I would not change because it gave me such a unique perspective, I feel like, compared to a lot of people where, you know, I have a lot of times where I lose that, you know what I mean? And I get fucking pissed off about stupid stuff. And then I always try to go back and be like, are you like, come on, dude, chill. Yeah. Like, you know, so I want to go back a little bit and talk about, cause you got to Altamir And you got there with another guy. And just to kind of, you know, go along with this, we don't have to say his name or anything, but he, you know, he was new in the same situation that you were in. And so, you guys were getting like the same treatment. And he couldn't cut it. And he quit. And I don't know if they sent him back home or what happened to him. But, you know, he just couldn't make it. And, you know, if they hadn't have done and trained, like, acted the way they did and smoked him and tested him to his limits, and he did that in a firefight or on the side of a mountain, or, you know, more, he could have killed a bunch of us, got a bunch of us killed. So it's just it goes to show you, like, you need to test that person's, you know, mental capabilities as long as their physical capabilities. Are they going to push through that physical limitation and, you know, overcome it with their mental fortitude? So that was very interesting to see.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know the history of that after the fact. But yeah, absolutely. And it was interesting that, you know, it kind of came to that, per se, right? And you almost felt a little bit bad or whatever. But at the same time, like you just said, I mean, man, can you imagine if, you know, one of these guys just balled up, I can't walk anymore.
Yep.
Can't do it, kind of thing. I mean, yes, absolutely. You would be killing people. For it to come to that, but, you know, like you said, I think that what needs to be reiterated is the amount of experience that you know, some of our leadership had from past deployments, from time served. I mean, you know, we had, you know, what, guys who had 8 deployments. We had guys who were in Iraq, guys, you know, I mean, they've been around the block, you know. Right. Almost kind of thankful, because yes, absolutely. What would have happened? And you kind of have to know that, right? You kind of have to know everyone's place and where that point of break is. And if it's not going to hold up to what we needed, you know, that's just, it's just how it had to be, you know. Mm. Basically ain't shit to what, you know, we went through, and let alone, like, you know, it's funny, cause, you know, you show up, at least me, I showed up to my unit and said, oh man, I'm not going to get fucking smoked anymore. This is so fucking nice. Not base. And little did I fucking know, you know, there was a
smoke show waiting for you across the pond.
It was good. It was all, you know, like you said, it was, the reasoning was there for sure.
So going on, you know, forward, like you said, we went to Bogus, which was a combat outpost, and it was inhabited, I guess, or under the control of the Afghan, what was it? Not the Afghan army, but the ASG?
ASG.
Afghan
Security Guard. Yeah.
Yeah, Afghan Security Guard or something like that. So you have the Afghan army over there, you have the Afghan police force, and then you have the ASG, which is Afghan Security Guard, I believe, and they're kind of a little more different than they're like the Rangers, I guess, of like the the Afghan army. They're a little more trained, and I felt like more trustworthy than the most of the Afghan army. So we went to this base that I guess they built it and they guarded it, and we just kind of flew in. We were the first people to, you know, the first U.S. forces in that area. And, you know, it was a pretty heavily dominated Taliban area, you know, the whole towns and villages around there. So, you know, we fly in a helicopter in the middle of the night and take it over and start doing patrols from there. So that was like, what was your, because when I was, even when we were coming into like Bagram, right, I had no idea what to expect. I had just like pictures of like Vietnam. I'm like, we're going to land in this fucking Bagram and we're going to be running. I'm like, we don't have weapons and shit. I'm like, we're going to be running out and people are going to be shooting at us. And, you know, so it was interesting how each kind of like step we took, and as the farther we went in, it's like, okay, you start to understand, you know, but going into Bogus, that was, you know, unknown territory. So that was fucking wild in my mind. I'm like, all right, you don't know what to expect. You don't know who's there. You don't know if that element is going to just start shooting at us instantly. And, yeah, you know, I think First Sergeant was on the Gator, and like they land the Chinook, I believe, or whatever. And like, he drove the Gator out into the, into the cop. And it was interesting, man. I guess, so what were you feeling in those moments?
Kind of like you said, I mean, when we were getting ready to go and they're like, yep, we're going to, you know, chop her in, we're going to drop in. And we were talking about practicing, you know, dropping down a security perimeter when we got out. And it's funny because I remember we like kind of did it. And then some of the ASG guys just like walked up to us at random. And they're like, you know, hey, how's it going, kind of thing. And we're like, shit. And because, you know, I don't think anyone knew, right? Everyone kind of like had reports that the ASG had control. But who knows, right? If intel got leaked or something, absolutely someone could have been in there, or someone could have taken it over, or whatever planned for us to be, you know, landing and that kind of thing. But yeah, it was definitely kind of an eerie feeling, I'd say. And just to know that, like, I think we all knew at that point that we were out there. We were in it at that point. You know, I think so. Yeah, I'll just describing some things that I remember. So there's like those towers that they had built out of shipping containers.
Yep.
And so we had a tower at each corner. I think maybe we had a fifth one that came down or something. I can't remember, but I know we had some, you know, corner perimeters with some containers that had some sketchy stairs to get up to like this platform area. And yeah, they had what was the wall stuff called?
HESCOs.
Yeah, HESCO. So they did, it had, right, most of the HESCO perimeter was done. I remember us working on like the front gate area, and I think we kind of added to that eventually or whatever.
And put the barbed wire up and stuff, dude. That was fun. In full battle gear, freaking pounded pickets into yeah. Also, the first relationship I had with a picket pounder.
Yeah. But definitely, like I said, just you kind of knew. And I think that's where kind of everyone started to kind of pick up their, you know, awareness, and definitely was starting to be on point. And in true fashion, I mean, that became a little bit of a honey hole for them. You know, we got, you know, whacked. I mean, even quickly, I think it was just, I mean, there is pretty much where we ruined all the trucks, right?
Yeah,
within
yeah.
a month or so, a couple months, we didn't have any trucks because all of them were fucking blown to shit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think, you know, I just, I remember being there, and man, it's weird because you just, you look out there in all that land and you think you can see stuff, right? We thought we saw them coming. We thought we were doing a good job at guard and that kind of stuff. And just to think back now that, you know, not that we were doing anything wrong, but those guys took all day long, every day, just to watch us,
mm-hmm.
to watch our moves, just watch what we were doing, patterns and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I think Bogus is kind of really where it all started off. We started doing some major, you know, some of the bigger missions, bigger walking missions. And I mean, yeah, it's kind of where our deployment started. The story started, per se, right?
Yeah, yeah. I guess you know, going on all these missions and stuff like that, and we got in several firefights. Does anything stick out in your head as far as like firefight? I guess I want to get kind of like two moments. Like, do you remember like a funny moment, or a happy moment, or something like that? And then let's go to, you know, like maybe like a fucking crazy moment, scary moment type of thing. So I guess, do you remember, give me a happy thing that, or a funny thing that you remember about deployment?
Okay. Yeah, definitely. Like four to five dudes on one cot watching the computer. whoever had like the movie computer. I remember like borrowing people's computers and stuff and just hanging out or whatever. And, you know, it was, we didn't, man, we didn't miss a smoke break either, you know?
Yeah.
Fuck. I smoked so many cigarettes on deployment, and I think everyone else did too. Yeah. But I think it was like the only thing we had, man. It's like, hey, you want to smoke? I'll smoke. Everyone was just smoking cigarettes.
The healthiest bunch of smokers in the fucking world.
You know? But honestly, I don't, you know, I mean, funny wise, you know, just, I remember a lot of just little memories and stuff, hanging out with people, being on guard with people. You know, when you're up in a tower with someone for 8 hours, you talk about some weird things. Yeah. And, you know, so yeah, I mean, I think it, you know, just that, I think, you know, yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You have a mixture of memories. You have fond memories. You have, you know, things that you cherish and that you're like, man, I'm really like, I wouldn't change that moment forever, you know? And then you have like moments where you're like, damn, dude, that was fucking nuts. So yeah. Is there something that pops out, like a moment that you were like, oh, we're fucked?
Yeah. Man, there's a couple. Just some of the truck accidents, some of the IED stuff that happened, and some of the, you know, multi-use ambush tactics, you know, some of the times when we got hit with an IED and then we'd get out and we were getting shot at. You know, I remember some like dang long firefights, 10, 12 hours of sitting there. We thought we were good. Get up, start to move, get shot at, get back down, that kind of thing. But honestly, yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of stuff. I remember that ASG captain, he made that guy pull the IED out of the road with a revolver in his hand.
I don't remember that. I don't.
Yeah, I guess he knew something. That was like right. That was pretty close to when we first got there. And yeah, he found out some intel or whatever, went and tracked this guy down. They drug him out. And he made him dig it out of the road. I thought that was pretty intense.
Shit. I don't remember that, bro. Yeah.
Down in like one of those riverbank roads, we ended up having to pull security on each end. And yeah, it was pretty intense. I thought for sure it was going to blow up, man.
That was what the heck was his name? I think it started with like an N or something. I can't remember the dude's name, but I know who you're talking about. He was the badass dude. The fucking
yeah. Well, when he got
Nasir,
there,
right? Wasn't Nasir?
Yeah, actually, I think that might have been it.
I think that was but it.
We got there. What was there? There was like skulls on the poles,
yeah.
Right? And I think first time told him to take it down or something. But I just remember that. I was like, holy shit, that is some. You know, warlord, true fucking just justice shit, you know. There is some,
dude, he was a badass, dude. He was fucking nuts.
But I, you know, other than that, I mean, there was plenty of times where we were like seriously pinned down, you know. I remember me and Carrick huddling one time just because we were just getting the rock face we were behind was just getting tanked, you know, with rounds. And I was like, I'm going to get shot in the foot or something and do something stupid and roll out of cover or whatever, you know, but.
Yeah. And it's different, man. When you're, cause I mean, the sounds of the bullets fucking hitting all around you and, you know, choo, 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 fucking snapping, fucking cracking. And, you know, it's, but that's where, you know, the high level of training and the ingraining it into your skull, you know, and that's where the guys around you that have your back are working to suppress that fire. So you guys can move, you know, yes. And, you know, I felt just like you guys were just a well-oiled machine, you know, and I'm this fucking guy just running around and in the between all y'all just fucking checking on everybody, just broken arrow, fucking screaming and shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, man, yeah, it was interesting, man, and especially cuz you're like the different jobs in a platoon, like, you know, you got the infantry guys and then me as a medic. It was just I felt like I had to always have this facade, not really a facade, just cuz it is kind of my personality, but I had to always have like a smile on my face and act like everything's good, because I felt like if I start freaking out or you guys see that I'm scared and, you know, if you're going to lose faith in me and thinking like, oh, is he going to be able to take care of me if I get shot? So, you know, I had to really, you know, elevate and heighten my my goofiness just to, you know, really make it you guys feel comfortable. And that's just my mindset around it. You know, my thought process was like, I have to have this personality or this role in this platoon so they feel comfortable knowing that I'm gonna be, you know, running after them when they get hit. And, you know, I didn't give a fuck. I ran, you know, ID hit a truck. I'm in the back truck. Sergeant Bunner be like, oh, go check on him. I'm like, oh, fucking, all right. You know, I'm just running, you know, out of the vehicle, fucking bullets flying all over the place. You guys all right? Cool. All right, I'm fucking going back. So.
Yeah. No, I feel you on that. I definitely, and, you know, like you just said, and I was just going to say that, I think kind of you use that goofiness, you're you know, always joking and shit, so that, you know, really what I thought, you know, it's like, I'm like, Doc's the guy no one could be mad at, like, even with your stupid ass jokes, we were like, well, that was stupid, but, you know, we still love him, you know, like, no matter what, it didn't matter, we're like, fucking Doc. And yeah, no, I do think, and you did a good job at that, man. I mean, I do think that that's kind of part of the thing, because I agree with you, man. If you were, you know, freaking out, I, you know, right, you know, the other person would start freaking out. Yeah. So I think only, you had us on that. It was good. Like, it's at it. Yeah.
Yep. And it was such an interesting, role to play because I was, you know, I was a specialist, but I, you know, was living with the squad leaders in their little bay thing. And, you know, I'm kind of with them almost not as an equal, but, like, you know, I'm not having to talk to them like how you guys had to be, you know, full, you know, like military bearing and stuff like that. You know, I could kind of relax a little bit where you guys had to be, you know, really, you know, on your game with how you presented yourself and talked to them and stuff like that. And it was just, it was interesting. And seeing, like, I remember one time where, the squad leaders had gotten like some alcohol in care packages and they were drinking in the, this was at, Bogus before we went to the police station. And they had a few drinks in there and they're like, Doc, you want to drink? I'm like, sure. You know, I'm like, all right, cool. And then, I think Camacho was like, go check on them out. He's like, I think, what are they doing out there? He's like, go out there. And, I go out there and, you guys had like a monster that had alcohol in it. Like you guys were drinking too. And you're like, Doc, you want some? Like, sure, sure. So I'm like, you can get drinks from you guys, getting drinks from them. And then, they're like, they're drinking out there, aren't they? I'm like, you know, I didn't want, he's like, tell me, Doc. He's like, I don't care. He's like, you know, we've been through, this was, you know, well into us going through a fucking ton of shit. So it's just funny. He's like, all right, let's go fuck with him. You know? So it was just funny that, you know, I'm like this middleman between you guys. And then, so I believe Camacho came out and it was like Van, I think Lukic. Yeah. Lukic, Stovall. And, I can't remember who else. I think you were out there too. And, Sergeant Camacho was like, hey, let me get a sip of that monster. He's like, oh no, Sergeant, you don't want that. You know, I think I'm getting sick or something. You know what I mean? He didn't want that. He's like, yeah, just let me get a sip, man. I don't care. And finally gave it to him. And like, Sergeant Camacho took a sip and like smiled. He's like, I know what you guys drink. He's like, just be chill about it. You know what I mean? Don't get too crazy. Like, you know, like have fun, but you know, let's stay on our game. You know what I mean? So that was just like a fun moment for me. It was just so funny because you guys are so scared about getting caught and like they're doing the same thing in the in the room next door.
Well, you definitely got adopted in.
Yeah.
And you all set up in the leadership room, right? The coffee machine, the, you know, I remember the little shit we wish we had, you know. And but yeah, that's funny. And you were kind of right. You were like one of us, but just kind of got pulled in. And really when LT Davis came around, right, you were like second hand because his second hand really wasn't doing any or was gone maybe. I don't know when Lewis left.
Oh, okay. Because he was his RTO or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I can't remember.
Yeah.
There's so much, remember. Dude, that like is just, and the more I talk to you guys, like stuff kind of fills in. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy what you forget.
Mm-hmm.
Conti, we're talking about that, but yeah. You know, that's what else? What do you got?
So, I guess. So we went from Bogus, which is a combat outpost kind of out in, you know, it was closer to the Pakistan border. So we had like guys from Pakistan coming in, and then we had, we would always walk into this village, and we'd have to, you know, do patrols and walk a long ways to get to the certain villages we were kind of patrolling. So we ended up moving bases from Bogus, Cop Bogus, to the police station, which was right in like the center of this little village, pretty much.
Right, the Chark DC, right?
Yep, Chark DC. So that, moving from there to, from Bogus to the Chark DC A&P place, which they had like a school right next to it, or inside the wire. So we're working closely with the ANA, Afghan Army, and the Afghan police in this little base. And they have a school that we're guarding to, making sure that they aren't putting IDs and crap in the school, because they would, you know, booby trap the schools and shit. So I thought that was interesting going from there, you know, and seeing like all the kids coming into school and stuff like that, and, you know, having made a difference at least there, because they were allowed to go to school without really, I mean, still we were getting shot at, and the, you know, the windows were all shot up and fucking rockets and shit, you know, fucking blast through them and crap, but, you know, they were safer than they were. But how was that for you going to that cop? And I mean, because we were getting hit almost every day, so yeah. You know, it was a definitely a different level of heightened senses. So how was that for you? Was that like a pretty big change, or how did you feel, you know, going from there to there?
Yeah, no, I definitely feel like we were definitely getting into more crap there. More firefights, we were getting hit more often. There was a lot of cover right outside the wall at that base, and they had kind of, you know, lots of free rein to sneak around. I think the one thing I remember moving there that concerned me most was that we had to deal with the people, the civilian population, that didn't have anything to do with, you know, the forces that were trying to get us, per se. Just in the sense that, you know, Bogus was out in the middle of nowhere. There wasn't people walking by, you know, maybe occasional goat herder or whatever. But right in the Chark DC, you're getting hit 1 minute and the street's empty. And 15 minutes later, the market doors are back open and people and kids are walking around the street.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't know who's who. I remember, you know, that was the hardest thing for me, is I thought like every guy trying to come to the gate was, you know, had an IED vest or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the fact that there is where, you know, we did some of the open door medical care, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, yep. We had, you know, people from the village could come in, and we had, I forgot what they're called, medical. I forgot what the name of it called. It's like not like a KLE. That's like, it's almost like a KLE for medical. Like you just had people come in and get care, really just throwing ibuprofen or something at them and trying to take care of wounds and stuff like that. So, but I mean, definitely help with building relations, I felt like.
Yeah, I think, you know, the other thing I remember there that was weird is just, you know, we were just so close, right? At Bogus, you kind of walk out the wire and you had a good distance to get prepped before, you know, we were kind of like, you know, where we were getting hit at. Chark DC, you walk a block and, you know, you're getting pop shots.
Yep.
But yeah, I think, you know, like I said, the biggest thing was just being in the population of people being, and they're obviously slightly more urban, a lot more buildings, that kind of stuff we were dealing with, alleyways and all sorts of that kind of thing, instead of having kind of an open, you know, landscape to look at.
And that's when they started really kind of hammering in those dismounted IEDs. because, like you said, our trucks were all fucked to shit, so we were walking everywhere, and that kind of ties into the knowledge and the experience that these leaders had, because, you know, we weren't just going on the same roads and paths every time we went on a patrol. We could go to the same spot, you know, the same village, but we would take 1,000 different paths, jumping over walls. You know, we would not go on well pronounced paths, or, you know, well walked paths, because they, like Sergeant Ward, walked up on that one, you know, thank God he didn't, the dude wasn't there to blow it up or whatever, right. But, you know, he walked right up on it, and it's a pottery pot filled with fucking explosives and, you know, all sorts of metal and shit, and wired up. And if that guy was there to detonate it, he would have, his fucking head would have been gone.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah. Definitely a change in tactics. And that kind of goes with, like I said, they were just watching. So they knew we had moved. They knew we weren't using the trucks as much. So they just doubled down, right? They changed stuff up a little bit. Yeah, I don't remember. I'm trying to remember his name. Swaggart? Didn't Swaggart? Same kind of thing. Or set it, or even set it off or something like that.
Was he second platoon, maybe?
I believe so, yeah. But same kind of thing. Waist high, projectile built into the dirt wall. You know, I think his might have been some kind of pressure plate deal. But yeah, so like you kind of mentioned, right? You got the ones where a guy's watching you behind the wall, or you got pressure plate stuff. But I definitely feel like, you know, they changed the tactics up quite a bit. And yeah, to put on what you said, you know, that's what made it a little bit more difficult at that point, because we were going way out of the way, you know, on purpose, right? Yeah. But man, did it make for some long, long walking missions.
Oh, yeah. And then, because we're dealing, too, with, like, the ANA, you know, some of them were, you know, crooked ANA people, Afghan Army people. So they would, if we, you know, we had to get to the point where we didn't tell them where we were going. You know, we had an Afghan Army element that would go with us, and we wouldn't tell them where we're going, because, you know, it would get leaked to the Taliban. You know, someone would call them, hey, they're leaving this time and they're going to go here. You know, so they would set up along that path, you know, going, hey, they're going to go this way. So we, you know, we really had to change it up. And, you know, talking about like the complex ambushes that they would get us in, you know, you're saying that. And, you know, we'd go into like a village, they, you know, and you don't know who's the enemy or not. This isn't like a normal war where you got one side sitting on, you know, one side in fucking a certain uniform and another one in another uniform. You don't know. Yeah. So you would have them, you know, you'd walk by a guy, doesn't have a weapon or anything, couple guys, whatever. And, you know, they're just waiting for us to pass. So then we can get into a certain spot, and then they go get their weapons. And, you know, the same thing with all the perceived civilians around you. And then all of a sudden you're completely surrounded and getting lit the fuck up. So,
yeah. Well, like you said, it's hard when every third person is wearing black man jams.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, it's four guys in black man jams. I'm looking at like 11 right now, you know, like who the fuck is it, you know?
Yep.
Or the thing, right? What they were doing, wearing the women's veil.
Yeah.
Right. To walk around town so they could just walk around and watch us.
Yep.
And we couldn't do anything about it. Right. Yeah. And
then see a dude in a burqa. Hairy legs.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely weird to be around all the people, and like you said, you didn't know. They weren't wearing any kind of uniform, they weren't wearing flags, you know, on their shoulders or whatever. But yeah, it's definitely weird. And I think too, with that aspect, is the harder, you know, the more time we were there and the harder we kind of pushed, the harder the Taliban and stuff kind of pushed on the community. Because, you know, they started kind of backing off, not talking to us as much, you know, that thing, that kind of stuff. But, yes.
Yeah, because, I mean, we'd make some sort of progress with these, like, village leaders and stuff. but we're not there all the time. We can't, you know, we're not there 24/7 in that village. So, you know, the Taliban, because they just are chilling and acting like they're part of that community. We leave, and then they start, you know, killing and beating and fucking up those villagers. So, you know, they're not going to talk to us. So that was very, it's a tough battle to fight. And I don't know, how do you feel do you feel like we made any bit of difference over there, or do you feel like it was a complete waste? How do you feel about that?
Man, I mean, honestly, my gut says complete waste. Mm-hmm. You know, just the fact that, like, you know, I remember like some of the beans, rice, and rugs that we were handing out, and then we were searching places that we were getting shot from, and there was the beans, rice, and rugs. We were handing them out to the community, and then the next block over, the Taliban's just saying, "Hey, give me all your shit or I'll kill you."
Yep.
And we're feeding the enemy. We're feeding and housing and clothing the enemy. Yeah, just definitely. Man, I just, you know, there was, we gave up a lot. And, you know, like you said, I think what it comes down to really is just they're ingrained in that culture. They're so accepting of the fact that, you know, of the way of their life. They don't want roads. You know, how many of them had cars, honestly? Yeah. It was kind of sad, man.
Mm. See, and I kind of felt like, at least I always, up until very recently, because I had a podcast with Latif, Parwez, and Rafi. And, okay, you know, I had this like, man, like, what the fuck did we do? We didn't make a lick of difference. And talking to them and hearing them talk about how, because they're all in the U.S. now. They all made it here. And talking about how we impacted them, and, you know, they, like, you know, Latif, that was his first, we were his first platoon, and he had other platoons that he was interpreting for. But they were like, you know, you guys listened to us and you guys really took into what we, you know, were saying, like, oh, you don't want to go here. You know, they're going to attack here, this and that. And like, we listened to them. He's like, you know, and we really valued their local knowledge. And they're like, other platoons that came in really, you know, I guess Rafi, you know, was like, hey, you're going to get, you know, don't do that. You're going to get attacked. So then he ended up like getting interrogated, you know, or questioned by, you know, higher ups in the new unit that was there. Like, how did you know this? He's like, I've been here. You know what I mean? I know where they're attacking from. I know what they're, you know, it's like, I'm not fucking the enemy here. I just know, like, you guys just got here. You're fresh. You know, I've been here.
Yeah.
And yeah, hearing them talk about how them having worked with the U.S. military gave them the opportunity to get to the United States, and like, they have their families here. Latif still has some kids and some family back in Afghanistan, and you know, I got to follow up with him. I don't know if he was able to get everyone over yet, but hearing them, even especially Parwez, you know, I got to see his kid. You know, he's like, hey, this, you know, they're here because you guys, because like, what, you know, you guys helped us. And you guys gave us this outlet and this opportunity to come here, and you changed not only our lives, but our kids' lives, you know, our next generation. So, you know, on a macro scale, like, I don't think we made a huge difference or really made an impact or changed anything. But for some individuals, you know, especially with us, like, these are people that we directly work with. We changed their life and their generations, you know, next generations to come indefinitely, you know what I mean? So hearing them talk about that really kind of changed my perspective a little bit, in like, man, at least, you know, we made a difference, and like, we made a difference in their life, you know. Boom.
Yeah, that's good to hear, man. I haven't followed up with them. That's really awesome to hear. And you saying that, I almost kind of got goosebumps. You just talking about Parwaz and Latif and stuff, because, you know, the thing that rings in my head right away, honesty. Those guys were honest to a T, man.
Mm-hmm.
They were with us. And I think that, you know, that, oh, man, we just benefited so much from that. you know, not only the local knowledge, but also just them picking up on A&A, talking about things, you know, this and that, them knowing the language was obviously huge, right? That's why they were there. But they can just pick up on little conversations, even, you know, among us, right? Among the people who were supposed to be supporting us. But, man, yeah, honesty. I remember Parwes picking up, we had an AK or something, or he borrowed a 9mm, I think, from Camacho. I don't remember.
But he always had something, dude.
Yeah, this guy's awesome, you know? But, yeah, and, they were at risk. They put all their shit on the line. I mean, you know, we were at risk for our lives and stuff, yeah, while we were there. But, you know, man, think about, like, fighting against the enemy and then the enemy who has, like, a big fucking target on your head.
And your family's head.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
I mean, because Rafi said, you know, right after he left, he just had come to the U.S. and the Taliban had found out where his family lived and went in, and they didn't know he was gone already. And, you know, they had roughed up his family. Luckily, they didn't kill any of his family members, but they were, you know, beating him and shit and trying to get information out of him. Like, where is he? Where is he?
Yeah.
And, you know, if he hadn't have been out of there, it was like a week before he left, you know, they would have fucking had him and killed him.
For sure.
So it's just,
yeah,
it's crazy. Crazy to think, you know, it's a whole different world than it is over here.
Yeah. Yeah. That puts a different aspect onto things, you know, and to think, you know, they gave just as much, if not more, like you said.
Yeah. I like to tell them, I'm like, dude, you guys are more American than probably 90% of this country. Like, you've done more for this country in 30 minutes than most people do their entire lives. Like, you know, they deserve to be here. Not only, like, they not only deserve it, they earned it. And they, you know, they, it's just really cool to see them fucking here and, you know, going to school, you know, having decent jobs, you know, working their asses off. And, you know, like, Parwes has such an appreciation for being here in the United States. And, you know, it's like, you don't see that in a lot of people who are born here, you know, and like, they're just like jaded by freedom. You know, they think that everything everywhere is like that. And if I hadn't joined the military, I never would have been able to have this perspective.
Yeah, no, definitely. And that goes back to kind of the cultural thing, you know, not only like the dirtiness of the country, but just like the simple things that, you know, people over there are totally appreciative of: a blanket on a dirt floor, you know, or a small couch pad on a dirt floor. Those are those people's beds. Mm-hmm. And that's what they sleep on. That's normal. That's what a mattress is over there. It's a piece of foam.
Yeah, and their toilet's a hole in the ground.
Right. You know, yeah, to think, you know, but like you said, it's kind of crazy, kids. And hopefully, you know, he kind of instills that, you know, like you said, with the upcoming next generation of those who we've benefited, you know, maybe that'll still be instilled in them and they can have that. They can continue that appreciation on, because, you know, like you said, you kind of mentioned it. That's what makes a good American, I think, you know, people who don't value our freedoms, you know, kind of just take advantage of the country. Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's, I get it to a certain extent, because they don't know what it's like. They don't know. You only know what you know. You know, you can't understand something that, or you can sometimes, but it's hard to understand a situation that you have never been in. Right. You only, like, I try to say, like, you know, the worst thing that happens to you, regardless of what, you know, it is the worst thing that happens to you. And your worst thing could be way different than someone else's worst thing. Like, someone's worst thing could be, oh, I got fired from my job. You know what I mean? And that's the worst thing that happened to him. You know, this, right. You know, where somebody, oh, my buddy got blown into 100 pieces right next to me, you know? And it's hard to kind of put those two together, or you know, make somebody understand, like, hey, it's you getting fired is not the end of the world. You know what I mean? Like, you can bounce back from that, you know? And I'm just from my mindset at 18, 19 when I joined, and the what I was doing and who I was, like, I wouldn't change that for a minute, you know, from where I am now, you know, having been through what we've been through. So
yeah, I think that kind of goes into, you know, and I'm not going to get into a bunch of detail, but regardless of the position, I think that we all have a feeling that we took life, you know, or we closely watched lives taken. And, you know, that's just not good for the brain, man. You know, that's what I think a lot of us hang on to, you know, might not be a very specific thing. But the fact that a bunch of little things or a bunch of big things happened. But yeah, I think you kind of come back and like you said, I think, you know, it's not the worst thing that, that could happen. You know, that kind of, for me, you know, I just got into this motorcycle accident and, I've been kind of bedridden for a while and I just was really down on myself, you know, oh, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know, I'm even going to walk again. I've got my foot. I've got all my fucking limbs. I had a nice helmet on. The fuck am I complaining about? You know, like, really.
And if you don't have that perspective, you know, you might still be just sitting there, you know, woe is me, you know, so, you know, how worse it could be, or, you know, what the different alternative could be. And you appreciate it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Not all of us made it back. That's the worst thing that could happen.
Yeah.
Right.
So let's fast forward, I guess, after, you know, deployment, you got out shortly after. So how long, what did you do? 3 years, 2 years?
Yeah, like 3 years. Okay. Because right when I got back, I was having those balance issues, and then they did the MRI and they found like a little spot on my brain. And then at that time, the Army was like really just pushing everyone out that had TBI or PTSD or whatever. And so like within 9 months of coming back, so I was out at the end of 2000, or maybe I got out in, yeah, maybe it was 11.
What happened with that? Did you?
Yeah. Well, like, I was just having some balance issues, you know, and I was having some PTSD issues. Don't get me wrong. I was going off therapy and shit. You know, I'll just say it right off the bat, man, my leadership was spot on supportive. And, you know, some guys didn't get that. But I was fortunate enough I did. And yeah, like I said, so I was just having like some balance issues and stuff. They found the spot on my brain. They really thought it was TBI. There was a couple instances over there that could have caused that. The main one I think of is just, it was actually ANA. I was sitting behind, pulling guard behind, and ANA guy came up and shot off the rocket, and I was right in his back blast.
Dude, they did that all the fucking time.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't care. They didn't look. They were just so excited to fucking shoot rocket.
Yeah.
But yeah, and that knocked me pretty good, man. I was like pretty, my head was pretty rocked. And, but yeah, so maybe that could have caused it. You know, I wasn't really having any like serious stuff, memory issues or anything like that. Yeah, so they found that. And then because, you know, some PTSD issues and stuff. I was medically retired from the military.
And then did they do surgery at all, or is it just something that, what did they find? What do they think that was?
I mean, they just feel like it's some kind of traumatic brain injury that.
Okay,
happened.
So it's not like a cancer or anything, like.
No. Okay. Yeah, nothing about it.
And you know, like you said, you know, because I feel like you had a very difficult time transitioning. You know, you, and a lot of us, you know, it was, you know, especially you being on the gun team and, you know, right in the thick of it. You saw a lot of shit as well, and went through a lot and had a lot of fucking explosions, you know, right near you. So that, getting back, you know, I still jump to this day sometimes. But it's weird things, like it could be just like a knock on the dang fridge or something. I'm like, you know, jumping all over. So I know you had a very difficult time when you got back. Did therapy and stuff help? Do you feel like you've got a handle on things now? And how was that process of you? Because to me, it, and it's okay if you're not, or if you want, whatever. But it seems like you're doing very well now compared to how you were when you first got out.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely, man. I was a complete fucking drunk mess. You know, and then it didn't help, you know, that that the army thought it was a good idea to give me every pill under the, you know, in the book. So, but yeah, I think, man, I had a really rough time. And I think it was just, I don't really know like specifically what it was. Like you said, I mean, really just being in the thick of it, seeing stuff, all the, you know, all the direct shooting. I think that just having, having to have had the intention to kill someone else, is something that takes a long time to get out of your brain. I mean, you know, like, you know, and I don't know, any MOS, I'm sure, but 11 Bravo and any combat MOS where you're going to see that, you know, you just wire your brain differently, right? When you're out there on deployment, you're just in it. You're, it's you or them, yeah. You know? And, you know, so yeah, I think, but yeah, I definitely did. And in a few years after that, still, you know, going to school and stuff, I was still drinking a ton. I was getting care from the VA. And again, it's kind of same thing. I mean, they had me on Vicodin and all sorts of shit. I mean, they were giving me whatever I wanted. So unfortunately, you know, yeah, it took me a couple of years to kind of get my shit together. It was actually when I moved to Vermont that, you know, I started calming down a little bit and kind of getting my shit together. I came here to visit Conti. I was supposed to stay a couple of weeks and, you know, I didn't really have anything going on. I was just supposed to come visit and hang out, but, yeah, I ended up staying and, yeah, I'm doing really good now. I mean, it took a long time though. It took years for me to, kind of own it too. Yeah. I think a lot of guys, you know, you can, and not to downplay anyone else's struggles, right? But I've been in the super darkest of places and acted upon that, unfortunately. And still, you know, I know that it's personal responsibility. Okay, yes, we've been through shit. Yes, we think of shit and our brain might not be right all the time. But until you're completely honest with yourself, someone else, healthcare provider or whatever, and you stay on top of that, you know, that's when you can start to heal and stuff. Cause you know, if you're just a drunken mess every day, you know, nothing's going to help you out with that. Yeah. But, I definitely feel like, yeah, I mean, it took me years, right, to get my act together or whatever. But, yeah. So, me and my wife have been together for 10 years now and, you know, she really kind of, you know, kind of saved me, put me back into routine. When me and her met, she had a 4-year-old and an 8-month-old. And for some reason, I just got kind of drawn to that, you know, and taking on the dad role, having some responsibility. You know, their father's not really in the picture. So it was kind of jump right into family, man. And that kind of helped
you with purpose again.
Yeah. Gave me these two kids looking up to me and some responsibility. And yeah, we've kind of just been going ever since, man. We've kind of just upgraded our lives as much as we can. I put in 5 years to the Vermont State, apprenticeship program. So I'm a licensed electrician in the state of Vermont and, I'm going to be testing for my master's license here in the next month or so.
We need you to come visit me in Texas and do some electrical.
Yeah. We're hard to find, I hear, you know, yeah. A lot of people, but yeah, so the demand's really good. I'm in the trades. My wife works in childcare and, but the main thing is kind of just to touch back on that is, dude, I still go to the VA. I go to therapy every week, every week, bro. Mondays. It's just what I do. I don't, you know, it's just helpful for me. And the thing too, man, I've been through a lot of therapists. If it doesn't work for you, don't try, man. If that therapist ain't vibing with you, don't put a bunch of effort in, man, because it's just not working. You know, you got to find someone that you like that you can work with.
Are you
with
able to just kind of switch if you aren't like, will the VA give you a different therapist or?
Yeah. I mean, as far as I know, like you might be limited in the sense that, so like say the small center that I go to, I know that they only have 2 in-person therapists, and I believe they have a third that kind of does some online stuff. Okay. You know, but at least you'd have a couple options there. And then, you know, if you wanted to put in the effort, you might have to drive the other way 30 minutes to go to a different center. You know, but I think the VA is there to kind of help you out when they can. If they don't have anyone to, they don't have any openings or whatever. I mean, that's kind of what I've realized is that everyone's super booked. You know, you kind of have to get on a schedule with someone and go with it. Cause, you know, there is a lot of veterans out there that are, and not a lot of services. Yeah. You know?
So did you feel like when you were going, when you're getting back and you're really fucking in the middle of, you know, having a really tough time, did you feel like you were the only one going through it? Or did you feel like other guys, you know, you were, had other guys going through the same thing? And like you, did you feel alone, I guess is what I'm.
Sure. Yeah. I would say yes, a little bit. You know, it was really hard for me to see our leadership just go right back at it. And then to come to find out, you know, a lot of those guys were dealing with plenty of shit,
mm-hmm.
and had dealt with it before. You know, this is their fourth, fifth time dealing with this shit, you know, or whatever. And, you know, everyone has their own way of doing it, of dealing with stuff. And those guys were just, you know, better at it. I mean, there's some guys that are just wired to be infantrymen and go at it again and again and again. I mean, I know that what you guys left. Did you go on the second deployment?
No, I got out right, yeah, so right before, dude.
And they left like right, what, like 2 years, less than 2 years, right? They were
like
back.
A year and a half, I think.
Yeah.
not even, it might've been like a year.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, just to think that, you know, some of those guys were just right back at it and, you know, but, yeah, I wasn't gonna, you know, I wasn't gonna like hide it either. You know, I didn't want to like off myself in my dorm room without anyone knowing. No, I mean, I just, you know, I knew that there was better options than that. And it, you know, like I said, I just, you know, had good leadership, man. They got me on the right path. They got me out, which is what I needed at the time. You know, I'm not embarrassed to admit that, man, I just, another deployment wasn't for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Me, I did not want to go on another deployment either. I guess too, when you say like, you know, is there, because a lot of guys, you know, have like, I mean, I've been there, had, you know, suicidal thoughts, stuff like that. And, you know, I've been in really dark places as well. And I've never attempted or anything or gone through with anything, but was there a point where you were considering that as an out, or, you know, was there moments where, and I guess what made you, if so, what made you change your mind and kind of not go through with it? Cause I think that's important for people to hear too. If, you know, like all of us, you know, even me, like you said, I'm like, you see me as like this happy go lucky dude. Like, you know, I'm fighting my own demons as well. And I've been there. Yeah. And, you know, really, I think for me, it was just lack of access to, you know, I don't have any firearms in my home. I hope people in my fucking neighborhood that are criminals don't hear me. But it's not because I'm against firearms. It's because I know how I get sometimes, and I get in some very bad mental spaces. And I feel like if I had access to that, you know, I'd rather just not have access to that. And then, you know, I can't shoot myself with a gun I don't have, you know? So for me, that's just kind of how I look at it. It's like, I feel like the chances of somebody actually breaking into my house are lower than me doing something stupid, you know, with my own firearm. So had you ever been in a situation like that, and what got you like out of it?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, not to like, you know, yeah, there's been a couple of times. I think what it was really, unfortunately, is like the pills for me, you know, and the prescriptions, just having access to that and just wanting to like swallow the whole bottle was an easy out for me. And, you know, that's what I had to kind of admit on was, you know, A, you know, just that I can't handle having anything like that, like opiates and stuff, and alcohol, man, I had to, you know, I had to stop, you know, alcohol, for me was just, catalyst really for my, you know, suicidal thoughts. As soon as I started drinking, man, it sounded easier and easier. And so, yeah, I just, you know, thank goodness. I don't know. Like, I can't think of any specifics of like why, you know, why it never went through, I guess, just thinking, into the future, you know, like I never really wanted to die. That was my thing. That was always my thing. I didn't want to die. I just didn't want to think about fucking war all the time. I didn't want to think about bloody bodies and shit all the time. You know, but it wasn't until, you know, I started owning that and started, getting rid of my substance abuse stuff, legal prescription or not, just knowing that that was kind of masking all of the shit that I just had to kind of get out there and deal with, and that I'm still dealing with. But I think, you know, the main thing, I think, just having like a dependable buddy, right? You gotta have a battle buddy like we fucking used to have. And if you don't see the sincerity and, you know, and the value in that, then, you know, that's unfortunate. But, you know, if you have someone that you could call that's been there, you know, especially. But I don't know. Like, I think the main thing, too, is just, you know, I always, like I said, I didn't want to die, man. I wanted to live. I wanted to do other things. I wanted to, you know, I wanted to have a family and stuff. And, you know, I just, like I said, the substance stuff was a killer for me. It's just a catalyst for that, for depression and suicidal stuff. Got to stay away from it.
So me putting my finger in your butt had nothing to do with it?
Well, I mean, you want to talk about sexual trauma, but funny shit. No, I don't embellish on that day, Doc.
Oh man. Well, like I said, man, we're all battling these our demons, and you know, I just like I want people to know, you know, that you're not alone in that, and that, you know, we're only going to be on here on this earth maybe 100 years at the most. And, you know, might as well just fucking stick it out. And when you're dead, then you're dead. So, you know, fuck it. Like you're only here for a short time anyway. You might as well let it happen how it's going to happen and not do it yourself. And, you know, like, unfortunately, you know, like what kind of brought us connecting again was, you know, one of our buddies, you know, taking that out, you know, and that's just, it really fucking sucks. 'Cause you know, I wanted to reach out to this guy and I was trying to get in touch with him for months, and I'm not saying like, you know, and I could have made a difference, but you know, it's just like, dude, I'm never going to get to talk to that dude again. And I know that he had so much to give this world, and he was, you know, and it's just sometimes you give into your demons, but dude, you gotta fight it. You gotta fight those fucking demons. And if you're struggling, call somebody, dude. Just fucking call somebody. And if you're in that space and you're just drinking and you're, you know, masking it with some substances, like, you know, get some help, man. Talk to your buddies. Like, don't fucking just add on to that, because you're gonna do something stupid in a fucked up state that you're gonna regret. You know you would regret it, you know what I mean? And you can't change that. You can't go back and change that. So I urge people to fucking talk to each other. And you know, the only positive thing that can come from this is, you know, now we're all kind of looking at each other like, hey, you know, I got your back. Like, you know, we're really I've heard from more guys in the last few days than I have in the last, you know, 5 years. So you know, just talking to them and, you know, getting kind of everyone's story and their plight and understanding that, you know, people are still struggling with this and it's okay. You know, just fucking talk about it, you know, to get it off your chest. Like you have a support system. Just because we're not in a close quarters with each other every day, like, doesn't mean that bond is broken. You know, any fucking guy that we were deployed with can call me any second, any day. And, you know, boom, it's like we're fucking right back where we were. So yeah
like you said, very sad, man. I just just thinking about it all day yesterday and stuff. And, you know, he has two kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, just, man, just the loss. And, yeah, I think, you know, unfortunately, you know, I hate to judge, but, you know, maybe it was substance, invoked or whatever, but, man, I hope that, you know, it's sad, you know, like I think I mentioned it to you, and I think we're now almost at losing as many guys as we did on deployment, from suicide.
Yeah.
And, you know, March killed himself. Terpstra, obviously, right when we got back. You know, and to think, you know, yeah, there's options, you know, and sometimes it's just, and it's just, if it, you know, sometimes you just feel like you don't have anything, you know, nothing's working for you, or that kind of thing. But yeah, call someone, get
it's
up.
Not, yeah, it's not worth it, dude. It's fucking not worth it. It's a really not. Permanent solution to a temporary problem that, you know, if you just fucking get the help. And, you know, I don't know what's going on in his personal life, but I have an idea, because there's other guys that are going through similar situations, you know, and if he was, you know, I don't know, but there's, you know, other guys that are going through same situations where, you know, I talked to another one of our guys on our platoon. I'm not going to say his name, you know, but he said he's going to be on here. And he had some pretty, you know, similar instances where he really tried. He attempted, you know, a few times. And, you know, I'm not going to, like I said, I don't want to say people, but when I have him on here, he said he is more than willing to talk about it. But, you know, to the point where, you know, he had a gun to his head and pulled the trigger, but luckily his wife noticed something that was going on with him and unloaded his gun. He didn't know that.
Wow.
So when he pulled the trigger, click, you know, and then he tried another time after that, you know, and it's just like, dude, but, you know, he's doing really well now, but he wouldn't have had that chance. You know, his kids would have been fatherless, you know, and it fucking sucks, dude, but like, you gotta, it's.
Well, that sounds like right there. I mean, obviously his wife is a badass support system.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone needs a good support system, you know, whatever works for you. But, man, that's amazing to hear, actually, you know, that, thank goodness he had another chance. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, just, you know, man, I can't imagine all the times I've been there. And thank goodness I'm here, man. I'm on the podcast, whatever. Fucking famous now.
You're always famous, bro.
But,
well, like I said, dude, I'm really glad you're doing well. And, you know, just to anybody who's feeling like shit or needs someone to talk to, reach out, bro. Like, I haven't changed my number. I have the same fucking number that I had before I even joined the Army, because I want people, I never changed my number, because I want people to be able to get a hold of me, even if, you know, like, they know that number. I have that number still. So,
yeah.
But anything you want to touch base on, man? We've been going for about an hour and a half here.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we kind of covered it, and, you know, and we're still here. That was just what I just wanted to say too, is, you know, we still all have shit going on. It, you know, I was like harping on myself a few years ago. I was like, man, it's been fucking 10 years and I can't fucking forget about this shit. This shit still bothers me, you know? Yeah. It's all right.
I mean, yeah, like you said, it's, you know, you rewired your brain and to be, you know, in order to, you know, be okay with taking somebody's life, because, you know, it's either you or them. And, you know, you come back and you're trying to rewire it again to get back in this different mindset, but it's difficult to kind of change that around, you know, maybe that's why you became an electrician. You're trying to rewire yourself.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, the other thing too, you know, I know some guys still just like, you know, I know some guys had really trouble finding something good going for them career wise or whatever. You know, I think that's a good, that's a good start, right? If you're just, if you, you know, if you don't have anything going, a good routine, like we kind of talked about, but, you know, positive stuff, positive people, check in with your brothers, man. I fucking, you know, yesterday too, just hearing all this. And then I feel bad because I've same, you know, I've talked to three or four people that I haven't talked to in 6 years, six, 7 years, you know, like, that's not right, man. We should all be calling each other on, at least on Veterans Day,
yeah,
whatever. Once a year, once a, every 6 months, check in with all your brothers, man.
Mm-hmm.
We don't call each other enough.
But it's hard too, because, you know, and I feel like everyone goes through this, you know, there's times when they're like, guys are wanting to be in contact. And then there's time where people just go dark, you know, radio silence. And, you know, I feel like a lot of us go through these extreme highs and extreme lows. And, you know, there's times when I go through it too, where I'm like super productive and I want to, you know, I'm super motivated, and then I just, you know, tank. And it's like, I don't want to fucking talk to anybody. I don't want, you know, it's like, I just want to be isolated. And I'm getting better at recognizing that and, you know, really kind of pushing myself and trying to find ways to get myself out of that, you know. And I do feel like this podcast is a good thing for me in general, just because I get to talk to a lot of you guys that I normally wouldn't have these long form conversations with. It gives guys, you know, the chance to get their story out there, to, you know, really kind of talk about things that normally maybe they wouldn't talk about with their friends or their spouse, stuff like that. And then they can show their spouse the podcast, and then it gives them kind of a better insight to what was going on and what's happening. And, you know, without that pressure of that spouse having to, you know, be like, respond or anything like that. So it and then also gives guys the opportunity to listen to other guys that maybe, like, they wouldn't think that are having these issues or that are perfectly fine. And to the outside world, you know, especially on social media, it appears that they're okay, but they're really not, you know. And it's, I think it's good to have that line to people you know, and people that you can relate to, and be like, oh, that guy's fucking struggling, you know, like, wow, okay, like, I'm not alone. I'm not alone in this. So
definitely. I mean, man, I appreciate just checking in. This has been good shit. And like you said, I mean, just you talking about some stuff that I forgot about and vice versa. And man, just having that basis. And, you know, I know you love my asshole and everything. And it's, I still love you, Doc.
I'm going to get me that asshole again one day. That's funny, dude. Well, all right, bro, I'm going to let you go here. I just want to say thank you again. And, dude, any fucking time you need anything, reach out, bro. If you're feeling like shit or just need to bullshit or whatever, man, feel like I'm open, man. And you know, even if, you know, I'm probably going through some shit too. You know, if you're going through some shit, there's probably shit that I'm going through. And, you know, it would be nice to fucking have somebody, you know, it's always, you know, my door is always open. And I want to thank you again, dude. So appreciate
thanks, brother.
You coming on.
And make sure to send me some links and stuff.
I will. All right, you motherfuckers. Thanks for listening. And as always, go duck yourselves, motherfuckers.